Jesse Allen here, catching up today with Mike Miner from Professional Ag Marketing Incorporated. Mike, great to have you on. How are you today?
I'm doing pretty good. How about yourself?
I'm fantastic, Mike. Thanks for joining us here today and making some time for us. I'm very, very interested to talk with you today. You guys just got off your crop tour and a very, very large route. Overall, just talk about the last week, last 5 days you guys were out on that crop tour. And just your general feeling and consensus from what you guys saw.
Yeah, so we went across about 2,500 miles through the Corn Belt. And that map there, perfect. And we started south through Nebraska, western Iowa, worked our way in through Missouri, and then straight east, worked through the Iowa states, and tried to wrap back around through the north side of the Corn Belt. So on that route, you know, we started off an area, probably we started off right around Sioux Falls there in the worst area on the crop tour. I would get off by saying, and that's to no one's surprise, right? South Dakota, North Dakota, we're sitting pretty rough right now, and only the future is going to hold the answers for what's going to happen to the Dakota yields this year. But as we went south, it just gradually got better. It was pretty much as expected. At northeast Nebraska, it was pretty average crops. And by the time we got into York, down on the southern side of Nebraska, things looked great. And then when we started getting into Missouri there, northwest Missouri looked great, but it kind of had some pretty shaky fields in between stops. It seemed like, our crop tour, we base it around trying to hit the most productive areas possible. So like I try to hit the top 20 corn producing counties and take samples in the United States every year. And all the counties in between our stops in Missouri were pretty rough. So a little bit excess moisture, but again, nothing like we hadn't heard from our crop tour estimates prior to this and crop calls. And as we worked east, it started to get even better. Illinois had some of those varying rain concerns, some excess moisture, and then, but it looked pretty good still. It maybe didn't live up quite to the hype that we thought it would, but it looked pretty good and has a great chance of getting average crops out of Illinois. And Indiana and Ohio look fantastic. I have no bad words to say about those two at all. That's exactly what we thought we'd see in the Southeast Corn Belt. And then when we wrapped back north again, Iowa had some shaky yields here and there. They were fine, but it was more or less, I expected more out of it. You know, we were expecting pretty average crops on the Mechanicsville, Cedar Rapids type route that we always stop at. And we had some smaller kernel counts around, and that might limit things a little bit. But as we worked north there again and got back home along I-90, it looks great. But there are a few concerns I have about this Corn Belt, mainly from the Minnesota-Iowa perspective. So, yeah.
Well, Mike, and I want to shift over to some of your yield estimates. And I am very curious about Minnesota-Iowa as well. I noticed on here, you know, a pretty solid yield estimate for Iowa, Minnesota as well. And, you know, I've been hearing a lot about some tip back in portions of Minnesota here already. And just a lot of folks have been focusing on Iowa here lately and wondering, okay, with Iowa being kind of split in half, you know, how is this yield going to look for the Hawkeye State? And, you know, that could be a big key to what we see nationally. What are your thoughts and concerns with some of those crops throughout Iowa and into Minnesota?
So you're exactly right. It's split between those two. You know, the other I-states look great. Eastern Corn Belt looks great. South looks fine. It really comes down to Minnesota and Iowa. You know, the Dakotas, we know exactly where they're sitting. They're in rougher shape. But frankly, as you can see, they just don't quite matter as much when it comes to a size perspective. So when it comes down to it, Minnesota and Iowa, southern Minnesota looks fantastic along the interstate. North, we have the top producing county for Minnesota in a severe drought right now, right? Renville. So that'll be really interesting as we go to Farm Fest here through the later part of this week and start to see that area a little bit more. We're actually going to travel up there today and get some more yield samples to try to back up some data. But that concerns me from a Minnesota yield perspective that we've got the largest corn producing county in the state and it's in a severe drought. So are hearing things of people getting ready to chop some silage and stuff in that area and north of Marshall, it makes you a little concerned. But for the most part, there the most part of the state looks fine yet with where we've been. Now, same with Iowa. You're split in half, you know, you're living on the edge here. And we went up and took samples from Kossuth County there, right smack dab in the middle of where that drought is in Iowa. And it still looked fine. It looked a lot like it did last year. And the problem will be going forward. So it's obviously just like last year. A lot of the Iowa corn looked identical at this point to what it did last year. The problem was it didn't rain the rest of the year after that in Iowa, and there's obviously a storm that went through and it changed everything up, you know. So I feel like last year we had this same yield potential. It just kind of, you know, the rest of the year was the rough part of it. And it's going to be the same thing this year. It's going to be weather going forward. How does the fill go? And it's going to come down to if we're at a 175 yield, it's because Minnesota and Iowa trended worse from here on out, kind of like last year. And if you're going to have a 180 yield like everybody's talking about, then obviously Iowa's pushing a record and Minnesota isn't as bad as we thought it'd be.
And, you know, you talk about Iowa. I'm from North Central Iowa originally there, not far from Kossuth County where you guys were at. And, you know, I've been up there in the last couple of weeks, and I would agree with you. I'm no agronomist by any means, Mike, but looking at the crop, you know, for the most part, it's looking okay, but definitely probably need to maybe catch a rain here, I would say, for some of those northwestern areas of the state of Iowa. And looking as well at your total U.S. production, 177.5. Talk about that a little bit. Talk about how that kind of goes with the USDA numbers that are out there and what your thoughts are overall nationally with that yield estimate.
Yeah, so a lot of people have been pushing this, you know, 180 type expectation. They left the yield unchanged again in the last month's report from the USDA, and they've been floating with that trend line yield, right? They use an average back in a trend line from 1988 to 2020, and that's the trend that they're using. So that comes in around that 178.4, actually, that trend does. And they've been using a 179.5, and a little bit of that factors in some of the early planting that we had. We planted super fast. It went super great. So they take that into account. And then a little bit of July weather is what they'll take into the account on the August report as well. So things are a little early yet. We have a lot of fill. Things just got done with pollination. So that yield can obviously change quite a bit from this point on out. But when it comes down to it, I'm not too far from the USDA right now with this yield estimate. And it's just because I don't have a whole lot of data to pull me away from it, right? If I had a 170, there's probably a pretty good reason I think there's a 170 that the USDA has been missing so far, or that Iowa's like a 180, right, instead of a 200. And I don't see that yet. Maybe with the forecast in the next 6 days, you know, next 2 weeks, we do see hot and dry weather. So that could trend a little bit lower. Do I think they're going to find that in this August report? I don't think they'll have enough built in it to change it too much here. I hope they don't raise it above 180 here, right, and increase yields. But that is something they could do. The I states matter a lot, and the eastern portion of the Corn Belt looks fantastic. And, it, you know, it's been raining in Chicago enough, right, the old saying. Mm-hmm. So
very, very true. Well, I want to pull up the latest drought monitor map. And, you know, you kind of highlighted some of those areas in our talk, and obviously looking at, you know, the northern plains, the northwestern Corn Belt, that's been in trouble. The eastern belt looking good. Well, you mentioned weather moving forward, and obviously, you know, the trade is quote unquote considering the corn crop made at this point. August is the month for soybeans. What did you guys see? Did you look a little bit at soybeans as you were going? I know you mainly focused on corn, but what are your thoughts on what you saw in soybeans, and maybe some thoughts on what we could be looking at with the soybean crop here moving into August?
Yeah, and soybean crops are so unpredictable when it comes to checking yield, especially before August. Soybeans are made in August, right? But I would say soybeans, from what we saw, looked pretty fantastic through most of the tour. Not much variability in color or height stands. I mean, we had some wet spots throughout Missouri and Illinois that brought up some concerns. I'd say one of the things that I could really take from soybeans on the trip was the lack of double crop. you know, through some of those states in the Eastern Corn Belt, there wasn't a heck of a lot of beans that were able to get planted into their wheat crop. And I just noticed, you know, one field, I think, that had true potential that we saw on the route. Otherwise, it was all pretty wet through that Illinois area, and that made it tough, I think, for them to get that second crop in. And when it comes to the ones that are over there, anyways, I think they look great, and their crops are probably made in that bottom circle there. But that top circle is the one that's going to be the X factor going forward, and mainly that red dot in southern Minnesota over some of the highest corn producing counties. That's going to be really important. I mean, Renville, is it a 175 today type area, or are they a 160 max yield? That's going to matter on corn quite a bit going forward, or if they start to get some rains to save them. But there's some damage done there already. And for the bean crop, they'll trend right along with it on conditions going forward. But I'd expect a pretty decent soybean crop here going forward too. I don't have anything to change USDA's numbers from this point.
Well, Mike, as we start this week and take a look at the market trade, getting some of your thoughts here quickly as well. I know wheat markets, we got that shrinking, declining world production. That seems to be kind of a factor here as we're getting a pop at wheat prices. Of course, we know the spring wheat crop is in trouble. I mean, it's done. We pretty much know that. But looking at wheat as the leader here on the day Monday, corn trying to tag along with it. The soy complex under pressure, though. Any highlights stand out to you in this grain complex here on Monday?
Yeah, in a year like this in the past, where we had factors like inflation coming in and extremely poor wheat crops, and not just for us, but for the entire world, like you said, globally, I was expecting a little bit more fund activity. We didn't see that pile in as hard as it probably has in the past. And I'm not trying to put anything down like $9 spring wheat prices aren't good, but it could have been a heck of a lot more this year with some of the factors that went on. So in general, we've seen funds on the way out through the back half of this summer here as the weather conditions have just held on enough and timely rains. And, you know, it makes me think, does spring wheat matter as much as it used to? And it's kind of frustrating. Less people are eating wheat, and everyone in the world can grow it. Maybe not as much this year, but we had crazy stocks to get us through the last couple of years. So it's disappointing to see the lack of influence that spring wheat's had on the grains, I think, through this, but you can see it in some of the daily trades where spring wheat's been the leader on these grains, which we haven't seen in a long time. And from this point on, soybeans are soybeans, and we've got tight ending stocks there to really lead us through. Demand's going to do kind of what it has to do going forward. But I mean, you shrink the yield 1.8 bushels and all our ending stocks are gone in the United States. So it's going to be a wild ride still through August and continue to hold this volatile trading that we've had, which is a little bit different compared to the last 5 years where crops made by the middle of July and things go down from there, right? So it's going to be a lot like last year with just volatility through the month of August yet, and see what the funds can do with getting something back in here if they need to, or are they just done and are they on their way out into bigger and better things like the S&P or other equities, right? Since inflation isn't real. So
exactly. Well, I know our farmers fighting these volatile markets, definitely a lot about what we talk about on the show is trying to stay disciplined. And I would think that's probably something you would say with their marketing plans, just with all the volatility that's been in the market. Obviously, it's lessened a little bit here in the last couple of weeks, but it's still out there. What would you say to farmers who are looking at their marketing plans right now as we get into August?
Yeah, I would just say don't be afraid to look further out, you know, back in the history of events like this. One of the better things to do would be looking at sales a year or two out. So I'm targeting 2022 corn very heavily in December, and then November 22 beans as well. Probably not as quite as much there, but even with the crop expenses going up year over year expected here, we could still look at some pretty decent margins for 22. And I would be very encouraging to try to look out there and take opportunity while we can. And we've got multiple crop years to try to fix this problem. A lot can happen. We've seen it with just China alone between ASF, and we've seen it with COVID, and you know, with different geopolitical events invading countries they're not supposed to, whatever the situation is, something always pops up. We know that about history when it comes to commodities and outside influences. Something pops up and almost no one sees it coming, or at least willing to manage risk on it. So just look at your profit potential, look at the crop you're going to have. And for guys that are going to have a really good crop this year, please take advantage of it, because some of us can't, right?
Exactly. Well, I know if guys and gals need a little help with their marketing plan, they can reach out to you and the team at Professional Ag Marketing. I know you guys are active on Twitter, of course, your website, professionalagmarketing.com. And I'm sure it's just as easy as head to the website or giving you guys a phone call to reach out to you and your team, isn't it, Mike?
Yeah, please do. And you can follow the crop tour on Twitter there that we just had, and we'll do some more checks today, like I said. Otherwise, if you're at Farm Fest this week, come check us out, or Dakota Fest here in a couple weeks, and try to meet face to face. And good to know you guys, and thank you for the opportunity.
Of course. Well, I think I'll have to swing by and see you at Dakota Fest for sure, Mike. So appreciate the time. Thank you, sir. And we'll talk again soon.
Thank you.